You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Over the weekend, the world went into shock following the assassination of former Japanese President Shinzo Abe. Abe was a significant part of Japan's government, and even after he resigned as Prime Minister, and was a major player regarding politics in the Asian region. I spoke to Professor Paul Clark from the Asian Studies Department at the University of Auckland about the aftermath of this tragedy. I started by asking if we will see a change in how Japan's politics operate.
In short, no. As the Liberal Democratic Party that Abe was leader of for a time has been in power since 1953, which is a considerable length of time. And so I think patterns of political behavior and the political culture in Japan is unlikely to change.
Do you think that his death is going to strengthen support for the LDP?
Well, it appears so, that voting for the upper house of the Diet, Japan's parliament, there was an increase in support for the Liberal Democrats. And so, yes, as was expected, a degree of sympathy vote for that horrible events of last week played some part in strengthening the ruling party's proportion of seats in the upper house, which will give it a more comfortable sense of being able to implement its policy.
Obviously, in his life, he was quite an advocate for changing Japan's constitution from being a pacifist nation to one that does engage in military conflict. Do you think that we're going to start seeing changes to those to that constitution?
Well, it's hard to tell, but there's a lot of resistance to the change to Abe's attempts to change the Japanese constitution. In fact, he failed in his attempts to change the part of the post-war constitution imposed by essentially the United States, the part of the constitution that prevented Japan from engaging in international conflicts. But increasingly, despite Abe's failure to change the constitution itself, Japanese armed forces have become more active around the world in terms of at least participating in United Nations peacekeeping kinds of activities and disaster relief and those kinds of efforts. So there's been a small, slow shift towards, away from the strict restrictions on the Japanese armed forces. Partly the opposition to Abe's efforts to change the constitution were from domestically, where people of liberal or left-wing persuasion were dead against any changes, but also, of course, the international context or the regional context in which Japan operates. Any hints of changing the post-war constitution's provisions about Japan's armed forces instantly gets a reaction from China and South Korea in particular. But even other states of say, Southeast Asia that were subject to Japanese occupation during the Second World War are also rather sensitive about a reassertion of Japan's power in the region.
You mentioned just before about China and both North and South Korea. Abe's policies were not very popular in those countries, and he was quite a controversial figure there. How do you think those governments will be treating this situation, considering that such a significant part of Japan's foreign policy has passed away?
I think they'll be cautiously observing if there are any changes. I doubt whether there will be any major shifts in Japan's foreign relations or foreign policies that would have an impact on China or the two Koreas. A key a key sore point or key nerve in the relationship with the two Koreas and with China was whenever a Japanese prime minister has visited the Yasukuni Shrine in Tokyo. Now, this temple houses the spirit tablets of dead people, including, significantly, the spirit tablets of several war criminals, people who were executed after the Tokyo war crimes trials at the after the Second World War. And whenever a Japanese prime minister, among them Abe, in 2013, and then immediately after stepping down from power in 2020, Shinzo Abe visited the Yasukuni Shrine. And so that is a signal to China and the two Koreas and others in the region that Japan has not properly apologized and does not feel properly remorseful for its actions in the Second World War in occupying much of the region. And so I don't know what to predict in terms of the current prime minister. Prime ministers have since Abe been perhaps more cautious than Abe himself, who was fairly cautious in this respect. So I think maybe that caution is likely to continue, and prime ministers won't be flaunting a visit to the shrine in order to send a signal to right-wing Japanese voters that, yes, we were a great nation 80 years ago, and it can be again. I think there's the lessons have been learned from the very strong reactions from the two Koreas and China in the past.
He was quite, yeah, he was very influential, especially regarding foreign policy. When Russia invaded Ukraine, he said Japan needs to bolster its defense forces, and they did. Do you think that having such a key figure out of the picture will lead to China and the two Koreas making more moves in the region?
I don't think so. I think there are balances of power and so on, and the status quo doesn't please everybody, but at least doesn't harm anybody. And so I don't think there's likely to be a great change. I think Abe was part of a general shift towards Japan becoming a more normal country. It is, after all, the third biggest economy in the world still. And to have a country which was such a booming economy at one point, you know, second in the world after the US, to have such a huge economy and yet not behave in normal ways in terms of its foreign relations has always struck me over the last 30, 40 years as extremely odd. And so Japan, I think, has become, or Japan is slowly becoming, a more normal country in terms of being able to conduct a foreign policy which includes some sort of armed wing in the region and beyond around the world. And so Abe speaking on the Ukraine invasion was, I think, a reflection of the greater normality in Japan's foreign relations.
And what do you think Abe's legacy will be following his passing?
I think just related to his attempts to normalize Japan's relations with the region and the rest of the world, and his efforts to change the constitution, which, as I said, failed miserably, rather. But also, of course, he made efforts domestically to try to pump some life into an economy which, since about 1990, has been rather moribund or lifeless. Abenomics was a label given to his economic policies of increasing government spending, of lowering interest rates till even negative interest rates, in an effort to try and get inflation alive in the Japanese economy, to get to 2% inflation, which used to be a kind of reserve bank target around the world. Seems ironic now in a time of increasing inflation around the world for all of us. But Abenomics was not effective, and the Japanese economy still shows relatively few signs of life or growth. It had boomed in the 1980s when Japan, you know, Japanese interests bought the Rockefeller Center in New York City and so forth. But then slumped in 1990 and has remained rather lifeless, despite the success of various parts of the Japanese economy and certain businesses around the world.
That was Professor Paul Clark on the aftermath of Shinzo Abe's death.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.